Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by WERU, 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, Maine, and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's episode, we discover some hidden gems of performance venues in our area and learn what decisions go into choosing a venue. Our guests are Paula Key, director of Bucksport's Wednesday on Main, Alan Wittenberg, the director of the Surrey Barn, Jörg Henner-Lotze, director of Eagle Hill Institute, and Lisa Tapley, town clerk of Orland, Maine, and a member of the Orland River Day Committee. Welcome, Paula Key, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad to have you back on the program. You were on the program about a year ago, and we were talking all about your wonderful festival called Wednesdays on Maine, which is a wonderful feature of Bucksport in the summer and fall. And so you're the director of this successful ongoing festival. Can you tell us a bit about it before we get into our topic?
Of course, and thank you for having me on. Bucksport Wednesday on Maine was created by me in the end of 2014, coinciding with the closing of the paper mill, because it seemed that we might need something that was a little bit fun in the wake of that loss. So our first performance was in June of 2015. And for the first 4 or 5 years, we had events every Wednesday on Main Street. Then COVID arrived, and that stopped us for 2 years. We started again in 22 with fewer events, but they're all just as good. And they're all over town, wherever I can find the right spot for them. And we continue on to this day, and it's just been wonderful.
Great, great. It's definitely a beloved feature. I know that. So since the acts that you book are so varied in style and scope, how do you choose venues around the area? Because you don't just have your performances in one place. You're all around the Main Street area. What might be good for a string quartet is not going to work for a metal band, for example. So how do you find and choose your venues?
Well, you just said it. What venue is good for a string quartet does not work for many others. And musicians don't always like to be outside with their instruments. So the first few years, we had a lot of events outside. The weather has become a little less predictable and dependable. So now most of my events are inside. But for instance, coming up on the 30th, we have a 9-piece band, and they are booked at the Waterfront Gazebo because they are a big sound. You can dance, bring a chair, and it's a perfect spot for them. If it rains, they'll be at the Alamo, which will be kind of interesting because they are big, loud, and it's going to fill that room. So I like to use a venue that I think if the performer likes it, then we'll go there. And if it doesn't matter, I've put people on the street under a tent, which is a load of fun. So it just depends.
Sure. Okay. So have you discovered some unusual venues in your time organizing Wednesdays on Maine? What are some examples?
Well, when we had Paul Sullivan, Richard Blanco, and Fran Vogt here 2 years ago, we selected the congregational church sanctuary because the size was right. It's not as big as the Performing Arts Center, which is almost 500 seats, and it's bigger than the Alamo. So it's about 250, 300. And of course, it was the hottest night of the summer. And honestly, we had over 300 people in there. It was crazy and wild and wonderful. But that to me is a really nice venue because the acoustics are good and it's just very pretty and comfortable. So that's one little spot that I like to use occasionally. Haven't had many times to do that because of some structural reasons. I can't always get people onto the platform. Mm-hmm. So that's one example that we've done. And
I imagine churches have amazing acoustics, just about all of them, right?
It does. But, you know, I couldn't do the Catholic Church, I'm sure. I won't be able to use any of the local churches on the main street. That doesn't work for me. But the Congo Church, I have used it. And the acoustics were amazing. Everyone was thrilled to pieces with it. And you can hear and you can see the sight lines are good. So, yeah, it's a really nice spot.
Great. So, so the audio and the visuals are definitely a consideration.
Indeed. Indeed. The other consideration for that is that depending on the performers, they might need equipment like amps or mics or something. Can't get all that stuff onto the stage at the Congo Church. So we really can't do that. We have to go someplace else. The Congo Church has a smaller venue attached to it, Brown Hall, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful, wonderful spot for a smaller group. We just had a 3-person bluegrass group there and we had, 90 people packed in there and sound, they brought their sound. We had to hire a sound person. It was fantastic. So, I love using Brown Hall because we always partner with Catherine Ring, who runs the Brown Hall Arts Committee, whose mission is to perpetuate the Know Your Neighbor program started by Catherine's late husband, Stephen York, who was the minister there. Mm-hmm. And so we always have refreshments and a meet and greet after. And it's a very community kind of thing, as opposed to just coming in and out to see a show. So that's kind of a treat for me. But they're not available on Wednesdays. So I have to do it on Thursdays, and that gets a little confusing. So
Right, what yes. Wednesday on Main on Thursday.
On a Thursday, that's right. And I've done that. Last year we did it once, and we've done it again this year. But it does sort of distract from the Wednesday on Main theme, and people, I hope people are not confused, but we try to be very clear about dates and times and stuff. So
those are some big considerations. I was curious, what percentage of the festival budget is allocated to renting venues, and are spaces ever donated to the festival?
Well, if we're on the waterfront, there's no charge. I reserved the space with the town, but mm-hmm. there's no fee to use the space. And when I've done events in parking lots, etc., that's free as well. If I'm at the Alamo, the Performing Arts Center would be free, I believe, but there's no charge for us. We're a nonprofit mm-hmm. and under the town's wing. So the church charges and the Alamo charges, they're really the only two. But depending on how many events I have, for each event, I would say if I'm paying, it's going to be a good third of the total cost, if not a little more. Just depends on if I have to pay for sound equipment or people. But so I'd say around a third, mm-hmm. the average.
Does the Wednesday on Main organization, when you use other people's venues, for example, the Brown Hall or another church or the Performing Arts Center, do you have to be concerned about insurance and accident indemnification and this sort of thing? I would be very nervous about, grandma slipping and, doing a header on your stairs or something.
Well, the good news is I couldn't do this program if I weren't under the insurance of the town of Bucksport. Every event is covered because they are my fiscal agents and I'm just under their umbrella. So that's not an issue for me. But if I were doing this show independently and had to pay for insurance like that, I'm not sure I'd be doing this show. So, yes, absolutely.
Do you ever collaborate with other organizations for fundraising or other purposes, and might that dictate your choice of venue?
I do partner often with WERU Community Radio. And back there, my partners in the September 3rd twin bill of Darling Corey and Pine Tree Flyers. It's not a fundraiser. I'm actually presenting, quote, presenting a fundraiser for the Buck Memorial Library in September. And I'm really, I have no connection with this event other than the fact that I'm the presenter and they're using my social media and the hall is paid for by a donor. And so I'm only there as a named partner like that. And I'm happy to do that because it's all the proceeds are going to go to the library at that event, which is great, which is really great. And as I said, I've partnered with WERU for events, not really a fundraiser for the radio. And what else have I done? Let's see. Well, the library had a wonderful program this summer of authors, and I was a partner on that as well. Wednesday on Main was a part of that program. So occasionally I do.
So by partner, you do the PR
I
and
do PR. I will sometimes pay for an advertisement, depending on what my budget is and how much their budget is. So we've done a little of everything on those events this summer.
so what are some of the upcoming events that you have for the rest of your season? And your season goes into the autumn, right? Until people start disappearing for the winter.
Well, this year we are going into the autumn, and it's mostly because that's how it worked out. We've had a cancellation coming up August the 6th. Our folks from the Boston area had to cancel. One of the musicians sustained an injury and can't play. That's Trio Mundo, August 6th, canceled. And so I just had the opportunity to book a few other performers into September and early October. So the next event is July 30th. That's the Main Street Rhythm and Blues Review. August the 13th, we have a group coming from Portland. And I've never had them up here, but I've watched their videos and talked to them and seen them interviewed and playing. Andy Fawcett and After Dark. It's a little younger group, and she's lovely. She has a wonderful voice, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That's at the Alamo.
What
And
style of music is that, Paula?
well, she does a little blues and a little jazz, and she and her band also do pub gigs when they're pretty rowdy, and that's not going to be our show, but she's very versatile because she's been in the business a while and she's pretty darn good. So I think it'll be a lot of fun, a little different. It's not my usual, thing. So I think it's important to reach out and find new performers to bring to our program. I think it's really important. And then we have a very special event on Thursday, August the 14th. Mel Allen, who is the former Yankee Magazine editor for 40 years, has a book. He's retired and he wrote a book, and he's launching that book right here in Bucksport. And we have a
Wow.
long history with Mel, which I won't bore everyone with, but suffice to say that he's connected to us emotionally. He's been here several times. He wrote an amazing article in 2018, November edition of Yankee called The Town That Refused to Die. And
Right.
that was post paper mill and at the pre-COVID, so the atmosphere was very charged with hope and enthusiasm. And then COVID hit and kind of gave us a new perspective. So he'll be here launching his book, and I'm delighted to have him because he's a wonderful guy. He knows all about Maine and New England. He's written about all of us in New England for years and years. So he has a great take. Then in September, real quick, September 3rd is the double bill with WERU. September the 10th is Peregrine Road, which is a duo that plays a little Celtic, a little Irish, a little chamber, a little this, a little that. And they're fantastic and very different. And then we've got a new bluegrass group on September the 24th at the Alamo, the Proletariat Pickers.
Oh my
What
goodness.
can I say? I love the name. And then we're hosting a wonderful trombone quartet called Bare Bones. And these are four talented musicians, one of whom I'm speaking to at the moment. And they're going to be at the Alamo. I believe that's October 1st. I have to confirm the date. So,
Yes, and
and one more, if I can mention, if I have time,
yeah.
we booked the Bagadoose Chorale
Oh,
on
beautiful.
December 21. They have never been to Bucksport. They're going to be at one of our venues, the Performing Arts Center, on the 21st of December at 3 o'clock, and it's going to be magnificent. It's a lovely, lovely holiday show. They have like 80 voices with a little ensemble accompanying, so it's going to be so beautiful,
I
and
have
it's
heard
great.
the last three or four of their concerts. One of my neighbors is in it, or actually two of my neighbors is in it, are in it, and I'm always blown away by the quality of the performance. It's stirring. It's wonderful.
It is. They're amazing, amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be great.
That's fantastic. What a wonderful lineup you have there.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, where can our Creative Maine listeners go for more information and to make notes and plans and so forth?
Well, we have a website, bucksportwom.com. We also have Facebook and Instagram pages and lots of information there. You can always call me. My phone number is all over the website. So just check it out. And if you need info, let me know.
All right, sounds wonderful. Well, this is always fun to speak with you, and you do so much wonderful work and really make Bucksport a center of the arts. And for that, I am very grateful. So thank you
Thank you.
so much, Paula. We've had a wonderful time speaking with you, and have a great rest of your summer and autumn. And we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure.
I hope. Thank you so much, Adina.
Thank you.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. Wednesdays on Maine in Bucksport has several offerings coming up. On September 23rd, a twin bill, Darlin Corey and the Pine Tree Flyers, will be at the Alamo Theater, 85 Main Street, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Wednesday on Main is partnering with community radio station WERU to bring two of the most exciting and respected bands in Maine to the Alamo. Call Paula Key at 207-266-7999 or email bucksportwom@gmail.com for more information. Also at the Alamo Theater on September 10th is Peregrine Road, a piano and accordion duo, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. The Surrey Barn has a busy late summer lineup, including Sunday classical music, August 24th, the Berezovsky Two Piano Cello Trio, and on September 14th, the DePonte String Quartet, both at 4 p.m. And a series of Charlie Chaplin films will be shown on Wednesday, August 27th, and Wednesday, September 3rd, both at 7 p.m. The Surrey Barn is at 8 Crossroad in Surrey. For more information, visit surreybarn.com. On Saturday, August 30th, the Bare Bones Trombone Quartet will play at another hidden gem of a venue, the Union Poor Farm, 56 Crawfordsburn, Union, Maine, from 3 to 5 p.m. The Bare Bones will perform a more formal concert on Thursday, September 4th at 7:30 p.m. at a not-so-hidden gem, Minsky Recital Hall, at the University of Maine in Orono. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on WERU.org. Next, we will hear from Alan Wittenberg, the director of the Surrey Barn. Welcome, Alan Wittenberg, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad that you could join me for a little discussion about the Surrey Barn, which is a venue nestled in the woods of Maine, and it has a tremendous history. And we're so glad to hear about the pedigree of this location and what has been accomplished there, what its history is, a little bit about you, and what people can do to hear wonderful music there. So you're the director of the Surrey Barn. Introduce us to the barn. Tell us what it's all about.
Well, I think of it as a iconic old Maine barn. It's just a big wood box, and therefore it has fine acoustics.
Mm.
And it can accommodate close to 100 people. It has a small balcony area, tiered seating, a Steinway grand piano, which a lot of old barns don't have. and at one point it had 5 pianos in it. So we used to perform on 5 pianos. A matter of fact, 2 people on each piano. And therefore there were 100 fingers going at once.
Wow.
That was quite a sound. So Walter Nowick bought this property in 1965 that the barn is located on. Beautiful area between Blue Hill and Ellsworth, right on the coast, with a sloping land. So it has a really special view out to the tops of Cadillac and other mountains on Acadia.
Mm-hmm.
And just a 5 or 6 minute walking distance to Morgan Bay, to the bay itself.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter bought the land in 1965, which was then a farm. And he started to do music there, oddly enough, with young Japanese professionals and students. And so since 1965 to the present, that barn has been like a house of music and international exchange and connection.
Wow. I read on the website, which has a lovely history section, that Walter and the original operators concentrated on Russian-American artistic relations. Is that true?
That came much later in the 80s.
Ah,
but
okay.
In 1965, from, we could say, the get-go, it was predominantly Japanese people.
And what was the original, I guess, goal of having this wonderful performance venue?
A cross-cultural exchange, international exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter, who owned the barn, who founded the barn, he didn't make the barn because the barn could be 150 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Walter was somebody who lived in Japan for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and he learned to read and write and speak Japanese. And he had a serious study into Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. But before that, he was a graduate of the Juilliard School in New York, and he was an exceptional classical pianist, had a great bass baritone voice, could conduct, and he knew all kinds of repertoire and literature.
Oh, so cross-cultural relations. So now, fast forward, here we are in the 2000s, and what are your criteria for choosing artists to perform at the Barn now?
You know, there is so much talent in all these nooks and crannies in Maine. I mean, people who live here. But in addition, like we had a wonderful Juilliard pianist come up who's well known in New York City, who's done both Brahms piano concertos in New York with an orchestra. You know, we've been able to have some exceptional programming.
You're looking for locals, you're looking for whom?
Both. And I, as I can, I like to maintain the cross-cultural international aspect. So that might be in the programming itself, the compositions, or in the actual musicians. You know, I can't send away to Japan or Russia or any place else, but I've gotten to know people from Japan and Russia, and they've gotten to know the barn. And most people who perform or come to the barn really are enticed by the experience.
And it is an experience, I can say that, having played there last week or 2 weeks ago, it was an eye opener for me. I had never been there, and so it was delightful. So tell us a little bit
Thank you.
about you, Alan. Tell us about your artistic journey and what must be a winding road that brought you to Surrey.
Well, now I'm 600 years old, so that's been quite. Be careful what you ask me.
Well, the Cliff
Well,
Notes
we'll need
version.
a lot more time. There's a long story to tell, but I live here. I moved here in 1982, so basically I got 43 years. And I feel in part as the Phantom of the Opera. It used to be called the Surrey Opera Company because we did grand opera in original languages. For example, Aida in Italian, the Magic Flute in German, Fidelio in German. And then we went on to do Boris Godunov, the original Mussorgsky edition, in Russian and other Russian operas. And sometimes we'd have people from Japan, from Russia, and other countries singing all together in yet another language. Like we learned a Georgian opera from the area near Chechnya, Armenia, Turkey, the country, former Soviet Republic of Georgia. And we did it there, and their youth orchestra came here, and we did it here. And those kinds of exchanges are such rich experiences for everybody.
When you came, what was going on when you arrived in the 80s?
When I arrived, there was hay in that barn, but there was Walter had his Steinway piano from 1965 in that barn. And there, you know, people, when Walter did concerts, that we used folding chairs, whatever, there was, now there's seating, tiered seating, and it's kind of set up as a theater. I think it lends itself very well to like a production of Shakespeare. It's just that kind of space. But we also have this summer shown two series of Charlie Chaplin movies, and it lends itself well to that, you know, black and white. Silent movie, old barn, it
With the
kind of goes
pianist
together.
accompanying the movie.
Well, no, we didn't have that. We didn't go that step further. But yeah.
So you're a musician, right, Alan?
I have a background in music. I have 2 degrees in music. I went into music therapy. I was a music therapist for over 40 years. And that's a very wonderful field. And do great work with music. It'll do things that medications won't do, that other treatment modalities won't do, and it's such a integrative modality.
So you applied your musicianship to helping other people in that way.
Yeah, it's different than giving a concert. It's different than performance art.
Oh, very, yes.
But it's kind of part art and part science. But I would say any music, any performance is part art and part science.
Yes, I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
So, when did you become the director?
Walter was a very powerful and gifted man with vision and drive. He died at 87 years old in 2013, and he put it in his will that he would pass the torch on to me in the hopes that I might continue some of the programs that he developed. And I saw such magic happen in that barn that it wasn't, oh, I really don't want to do this, or this is impossible. I wanted to try, but I was kind of alone. And that was really a hard thing to do. And I just got lucky, very lucky. I had people come and enjoy those Chaplin films who had never been to the barn. And four of them said they wanted to really help. And they could have been out on the golf course, on their sailboats, whatever, but they rolled up their sleeves, they got their hands dirty, their boots dirty, they contributed, and we had the start of a little committee, and that helped me out a lot. But we really didn't start programming until about 2015. So in many ways, this is our 10th anniversary of
Of the new iteration of the Surrey
exactly,
Barn.
exactly.
Wow. Well, I was thrilled to find it. I've been living here since 2018 and I had never been there. So,
Well,
you're con
anybody who's not been there is breaking state of Maine laws.
Yeah, they're in for a treat. That is for
Yeah,
certain.
yeah.
So there are things other than music going on in your space. So can you talk a little bit about some of the other creative endeavors that are happening there?
Sure, be happy to. We had Robert Cheddelly, one of the best portrait painters, well known for his national and international project called Americans Who Tell the Truth. We have art. We have a Russian artist from St. Petersburg coming to put up her exhibition tomorrow.
But that's
Okay.
how long will the show be hung?
Or almost the whole month of August.
There you go. So people can definitely come and
Yeah.
see that. So you
And
have
that
artists.
goes back to reconnecting, with some of the roots of the barn in the modern era.
Right, the cross-cultural connection.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. You have some other you have other buildings on the grounds that are lovely, and I know that you have an opportunity for people to stay with you.
Yes. So there's seven buildings here. One of them is my home. I live here too. And the others are basically lodging, short-term rentals.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that would be quite a treat to live
which
there.
could be available to musicians. And the idea was passed on to me about making this into a kind of a artist's retreat center. I like that idea, and I like people to know about it, especially people who might be interested in taking part in it in some way.
Well,
Yes.
they if they're on the site, they can perform as well as perfect their art alone, so that would be
Yeah,
tremendous.
it could be an artist's retreat, but it also could be a retreat forward slash residential, performance space.
Well, I know that if I were having a Maine vacation, I would love to stay on those grounds for a few days and take in a performance and the art show and all the things. And what a great spot. It's a
Yeah,
beautiful,
the
beautiful
sweet
spot.
thing is you're within short reach to Acadia National Park, and for a lot of people, that's really desirable.
Yeah, for sure. So please tell us where our Creative Maine listeners can go for more information about the Surrey Barn and all that it offers.
Well, that's sort of simple. Just surreybarn.com.
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 Keep it simple. Do you have a phone number that you give out?
Yes. 207-667-1308.
Well, that's
That
wonderful. And I think that it is definitely a gem that should not be hidden, and people should be well aware of what they have either in their backyard if they live here or on a place for a wonderful vacation venue if they don't. And so, congratulations on a lovely spot, and long may it wave. Yeah, good luck to you and the Surrey Barn.
Thank you so much, and
All
thanks
right.
for inviting me. And my pleasure to always talk about the barn, bring out some new aspects in this interview. And
Absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Alan.
ditto.
Welcome, Jörg Henelotzer from the Eagle Hill Institute. We're so glad to have you on the show to tell us about your very interesting institute and its relationship to the performing arts. So, you are the director of the Eagle Hill Institute in Steuben, Maine. And please introduce us to the Eagle Hill Institute and what it's about.
The answer is complex, but I will keep it simple. We are a natural history science-focused organization. So 95, 97% of what we do is dedicated to providing training seminars for professional field biologists, aspiring field biologists. We publish maybe 10, 11 or so peer-reviewed scientific journals. We also host the 400 or 500, 600 person Northeast Natural History Conference. So that's who we are. But to make it more complicated, we happen to have a setting that's almost ideal for performances, with a coffered ceiling and the structure of the room being very conducive to performances of even clavichords,
Which are very quiet, yes.
are very quiet. So it's a very intimate European salon style setting.
And so you were talking about your concert facility. Is that a main meeting room most of the time, or what do you use it for when you're not hosting clavichord musicians?
Public, there are two kinds of performances, if I can backtrack. There are two kinds of performances, classical chamber concerts, mostly stringed instruments, piano, harpsichord, clavichord. It goes to the point of hosting a concert with a Guzheng, a concert focused on Chinese pentatonic music. Also, voice performances. Schubert's Lieder were performed last year. This year, we have a delightful performance by a mezzo soprano, songs from the 1600s and 1700s, So it's a diverse performance hall, but it's also lectures. So we host lectures. There's a separate dining room, call it a restaurant if you like. After our concerts, there's always an optional dinner. One of the charming things about the setting here and why the musicians love to perform here, it's a very human experience. It's not just an applause, thank you for coming, we're all going to go our separate ways. After the concert, the musicians and the audience members join each other for dinner, so it's a very human setting. So from an elementary strategic standpoint, this builds relationships in ways that a fully dedicated performance hall can't do.
That's delightful. Yes. So, how does all this fit with your institutional philosophy?
Do you mind a squishy answer?
No, squish away.
Okay. I hesitate to say that the primary mission of the Institute is to engage with people on an emotional level. For composers, for musicians, for audience members, the extended evening at Eagle Hill is very much a deeply human emotional experience. The setting is essentially that of a fine art museum. We collect 19th century and earlier works of art, mostly European, Japanese, so marbles, bronzes, paintings. For people in the world of art, art is also very much an emotional experience. And if you get into a debate with someone about what is or isn't art, that's a sure way to get into a fight sooner or later. For field biologists, those people who go on a hike, oh, look at all this lovely greenery, that's an emotional experience.
Can be.
For scientists who dedicate their life to looking in detail at the greenery, it's also emotional.
So that's
It
how you
helps.
fit the rationale for presenting emotionally connected concerts to emotionally connected science. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it's in other words, we are aware that there's a so-called Humboldtian balance here, where the Institute, in a very real sense, functions as a crucible where people share time and space and they get along, whether they're musicians or philosophers, people with interests in art or astronomy. The core experience is a very human one.
So when you have your science-based conferences at the Institute, do you present some of the concerts as a part of that meeting or?
Not intentionally, but it certainly overlaps sometimes.
And so they can find the science and the beauty in everything that is presented there. Do you have a series of galleries for the paintings and the sculpture, or is it just part of the experience of being there?
The latter is a better way to put it. It's an interesting setting. We are very mindful that we're not very directed in the sense of having a 1 year or 5 year plan. The why are we hosting so many concerts? It'll be 24 concerts this year. That's almost one every 2 weeks. What's surprising to many people is that we don't do any fundraising to support the concerts. They're fully self-supporting by way of ticket sales and dinner sales. That allows us to insert a concert within 3 weeks' notice if there's a space in the schedule. So, one of your preview questions was what is un upcoming in the 2025 season?
Yes.
We don't know.
What presents itself to you at the right time is going to be it.
There's charm to living in an ever more expectationless universe. We have a piano and cello performance by a Berlin ensemble coming up towards the end of September. I received notice maybe, or a statement of interest maybe a week ago. It's in the schedule.
So your audience is drawn from whom?
It's people within maybe a 50, 60 mile radius.
So how did the Institute get started in Maine? What was the charm of Maine for you?
I love the expression vagaries of fate. If you overthink your reasoning for doing what you do, you might miss the actual doing. In any case, we ended up here.
Very good. Very good. Well, you add to the artistic landscape in a very interesting way. So, how can our Creative Maine listeners find Eagle Hill and come and experience a concert at the Institute?
We occupy the only inhabited summit on the eastern Maine coast. This is the only summit where you can have a cup of coffee or a concert or a dinner. We're on Eagle Hill in the US. So the website is eaglehill.us. You need to remember the word music, and you've found us.
Okay, so eaglehill.us. Very good.
Slash
And
music.
slash music, and your website says it all after that. Well, thank you so much. It is indeed a hidden gem. I'm so glad to hear about you. One of my colleagues said, "Oh, you have to investigate this. It's very unusual." And I'm very glad that I did. So thank you so much, Jörg Henne-Latzer, for coming on with me, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Adina.
Welcome, Lisa Tapley, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad you're here. Lisa, you're the town clerk of Orland, and we're very grateful that you have taken the proverbial bull by the horns and you've been helping to drive the truck on Orland River Day, which is coming up on September 13th. And so tell us a little bit about Orland River Day. It's a community festival. What else is it?
Yeah, so it's a chance for the town of Orland to host an event that's very family oriented, town oriented. It's along Naramisic Drive in Orland, which is right along the river down there. It's a beautiful spot to have an event. There's a parade, vendors, food. It's a big day for the town of Orland.
Yes, so it's in addition to being a community festival, which it has been for over 50 years, am I right?
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time. My parents went to it when they were kids.
Wasn't it started in 1976 for the bicentennial? I
Yes, it
remember.
was.
Wow. So, yeah, we're coming up on 50 years.
Yeah.
So, in addition to that, it's also a showcase for the arts, which is what Creative Maine is about. We talk about the arts and creativity in Maine, and community festivals are a wonderful place to find local art. So it's a as a showcase for the arts, can you discuss some of the artists, artisans, and musicians being featured at the Orland River Day Festival this year?
Sure. So this year we have three musician bands. We have Scrambled Steel, which they performed last year. They're a steel drum band. We also have the Newell Family, who was also down on the river last year. They're a folk band who will walk up and down Naramisic Drive playing the fiddle, violin, singing, dancing. And new this year is Tidewalker. They are going to be performing at the Orland Community Center at 11 for the car show. They are a old school rock band, so they'll be very fun to have this year, especially in that kind of venue for the car show.
Oh,
Some
yeah, that's
artists,
perfect.
yeah, it fits right in with them. So we're at 47 vendors total right now between food and craft vendors. We have Beneath the Leaf. They're a vendor who was here last year. They do personalized jewelry with inscriptions. with dried foliage in them,
Ooh.
flowers, leaves. They're very pretty stuff. We also have Maine Creations, who was back this year. They do Maine photography and canvas prints. We have Home Incorporated will be there, and they showcase a bunch of local talent right at Home Co-op. So they'll have stained glass, pottery, weaving, any kind of craft you can think of. Home Co-op has a vendor for it. We have Cozy Bear Stitches. They were also a vendor here last year. They make crocheted items, crocheted animals, anything crocheted, they can make it. They're very talented.
Wow, that's great. And so it represents things all across the board. I think there's some, is there a bakery coming this year or no?
I don't think a bakery. We have Portable Pie Place out of Searsport. They're going to be here this year. We have Wingdingas. They're a new food truck to us this year. The Bucksport Rod and Gun Club always has their grills out, so they're going to be having, burgers, hot dogs, pulled pork, that kind of thing. Alamoosic Lodge is going to be at the car show this year, so they're going to be serving some food and some liquor there. And we also have Gott's Lunch. She was there last year. They're out of Brooksville, and they do sandwiches, paninis, that kind of thing.
Wow, that's amazing. So you have all these local artists and artisans. How can a local artist sign up to be represented and vend there?
Sure. So if you're interested in being a vendor, craft, food, doesn't matter. You can email me or the committee at orlandriverdays@gmail.com,
Is
or
it
you
River
can,
Days with an S or River Day?
ooh, let me double check.
Because I know people say Orland River Days, but it's actually just one day.
Yeah, let me, it's orlandriverday@gmail.com. You can email the committee for a vendor application, or you can call the town office when we're open Tuesday through Friday, 8 to 5. And ask for me, Lisa. I can gladly give more information about how to sign up, get you the vendor application, that kind of thing.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so talk a little bit about the Historical Society. We have a wonderful historical society here in Orland, which is not unusual for small towns in Maine. It's one of the things that makes them so special. And this year there is going to be an art show which will be held at the community center. So in addition to the craft vending that goes on in the street on the festival, there will be an art show, and these artworks are for display. If an artist wishes to sell, they can, but they have to be there for the entire show. But this is going to showcase local art, fine artists as opposed to craft artists or artisans. So this would be sculpture, painting, printmaking, all this sort of art. And that's going to be at the Orland Community Center during the course of Orland River Day. So that, do you have an application for that too, or for that would they have to call the Historical Society?
So you can submit your artwork, and there's no submission fee. The deadline to do so is September 1st. I have an email if you would like to sign up and a phone number. The email is murh49@gmail.com, and the good phone number is 207-461-8866.
That's great. This is the first time that actual Orland artists have been highlighted. And I think it's a wonderful idea during Orland River Day because we are celebrating Orland and the community and everyone who lives within it. So fantastic. So for more information about River Day, the performers, the participants, where can folks go? You mentioned where you sign up, but if you wouldn't mind repeating some of those numbers and URLs.
Sure. So you can find Orland River Day on Facebook. You can just type in Orland River Day, and we're the first one that pops up that has a schedule of events. And every day from now until River Day, there'll be something advertised, like a band or a vendor or food. You can also visit the Orland website, townoforland.org, and click on the River Day tab. And that has a schedule of events and the events day flyer, which will tell you when and where everything's going on. If you'd like more information about being a vendor, you can email orlandriverday@gmail.com or call the Orland Town Office Tuesday through Friday, 207-469-3186, and ask for Lisa. And with the art show at the community center, if you'd like to submit something for that, you can call 207 461-8866 or email murh49@gmail.com.
That's fantastic. Now, Lisa, I want to ask a little bit about you. You've been referred to around here as a force of nature. And we know you're the town clerk, but you're also a vendor. What are you selling at Orland River Day?
Yeah, I am a vendor. I make canned goods, pickles, dilly beans, pickled beets, that kind of thing. You know, there's a whole variety of pickles, and my little business is Two Shepherds Canning. I have two German shepherds, so hence the name Two Shepherds Canning.
All right. Well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for all the work you do for our community. And I'm very thrilled that you could come on with us today. Have a wonderful rest of your summer and a wonderful River Day.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to my lovely guests, Paula Key, Alan Wittenberg, Jörg Henner Lotze, and Lisa Tapley. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman, with additional music performed by The Bare Bones. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on WERU.org for another eclectic episode on Thursday, September 18th at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, when we will learn about finding our crafting tribe when we crave community. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.